Welcome to another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week, as our award-winning news team brings you the top stories this past week impacting Indiana agriculture. I'm C.J. Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and we have a lot of news to cover involving ag policy at both the Indiana State House and out on Capitol Hill in D.C. Speaking of your lawmakers, you'll be hearing from one of Indiana's congressmen, Jim Baird. I had the chance to chat with him last weekend at the Purdue Ag Alumni Fish Fry, as he talks about the prospects of getting a new farm bill across the finish line here in 2025. You'll also hear from several ag leaders, including Bruce Kettler with the Agribusiness Council of Indiana, as they focus on legislation at the State House that could have a major impact on the ag industry. Also, we'll have your Indiana farm forecast with Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin on the way, as well as a look at Friday's grain markets with Brian Basting with Advanced Trading. That's coming up here in just a few. But first, lowering the property tax burden on Indiana's farmland owners is the ultimate goal of House Bill 1192 that's been written by State Representative Kendall Culp. The bill would change the calculation that your county assessor uses to determine the assessed value of farmland, with the goal of lowering farmland property taxes.
I like what Representative Culp has brought in his bill. I think it is absolutely overdue that we help farmers.
And that's Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith, who also serves as the Secretary of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture.
Farm Bureau put out a report that in the last year, farmers have seen property taxes increase 26.2% just year over year. And that's insane. You can't continue to have a profitable business or farm with seeing high taxes like that.
How does Beckwith respond to those who say that lowering farmland property taxes could mean a drop in funding for schools and other local programs?
I get the fact that you can't just stop property taxes right away because the small communities rely on those property taxes. And so we're not trying to pull the rug out from under anyone, but we will destroy small farms, family-owned farms, if we don't get this property tax under control quickly. And that's what I think Kendall Culp is trying to do. That's what I know Mike Braun is focused on. I've certainly been a very loud proponent of fixing the property tax issue for farmers.
He adds that Governor Mike Braun's directive to cut about 5% of the budget for each of the state's agencies will go a long way in helping provide that property tax relief.
If we can trim government from a state perspective, you don't need as much of a taxpayer funds to prop up this bloated government. Maybe then we can transfer those savings to farmers by cutting back on things like property taxes. So I think this is a 30,000 foot conversation, but it all starts with getting the tax burden off of the taxpayer as much as we possibly can. But if we're going to do that, we got to be effective and efficient with what we are called the steward here in government.
You can hear my full conversation with Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith and read more about Representative Culp's bill at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. Well, speaking of the Indiana General Assembly, state ag leaders are working to shoot down a bill in the Indiana Senate that would increase the number of inspections at confined feeding operations, such as hog farms, across the state.
Trying to double the inspection frequency, those dynamics don't shake out to anything productive as far as I can tell.
And that's Josh Trinneri, Executive Director of Indiana Pork. Senate Bill 193, which was introduced by State Senator Rick Niemeyer, would require that the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, or IDEM for short, inspect each of the state's over 1,600 confined feeding operations, not once, but twice, during each five-year permit term. Trinneri shared with Hoosier Ag Today his frustration, not just about the bill, but with IDEM as well.
Our concern would be, especially, and we're very frustrated with the agency right now because when they're asked about it, they indicate that it won't have any fiscal impact on the agency, even though essentially they're doubling their inspection frequency. They're saying they won't have to hire any new inspectors. So all I can figure is that they've got inspectors that aren't fully deployed, which is an issue in and of itself, or that they have fully deployed inspectors, but they're going to have to pull them off of some of these discretionary inspections, which are the ones we want them to do, in favor of meeting some blanket statutory requirement that's nothing more than a talking point.
A fiscal study of the bill says that IDEM would have to hire 6 additional full-time staff and spend an additional $565,000 a year to make up for that increased workload. Most of all, Trenary says the system just isn't broken. He's encouraging those who have a confined feeding operation to contact their state senator to vote no on Senate Bill 193.
Reach out to your senator and say, this past reporting period for IDEM, there was 6 water quality violations in our industry in a year's time out of north of 1,600 permits. And I think there's more beneficial uses, more environmental benefit you could do elsewhere by if you're going to reallocate IDEM resources. And I think you should just let your senators know that.
Check out my full conversation with Josh Trenary with Indiana Pork at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, last weekend, President Trump signed an executive order to impose 25% tariffs on all imports from Canada and Mexico, as well as an additional 10% tariff on imports from China. Those were supposed to take effect last Tuesday, but on Monday, Trump hit the pause button on the tariffs against Canada and Mexico after both countries agreed to do more to stop the flow of drugs from coming into the U.S. Trump says he's delayed the tariffs for 30 days against both Mexico and Canada to give them more time to work out a deal with the administration. Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. It's time now for Hoosier Ag Today's Farm Market Review, and for that, we bring in Andy Eubank.
Thank you, CJ. A look at the Friday markets. They ended lower, and we'll have all the numbers coming up. We'll begin, though, with market analysis. I grabbed it in the middle of the trading session from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. Markets traded lower throughout the Friday session. Corn, beans, wheat all down, double-digit losses in some cases. As we look at the soybean picture, and Brian, as we go into the weekend, maybe not too surprising that it was a sell-off.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Andy. I do think ahead of the weekend, there's probably more of a risk-off mentality, particularly with this large fund position that is in place in corn. Ahead of a weekend, again, with weather in South America on the front burner, trade issues, of course, on the front burner, with China at least, that it was just an opportunity after seeing a multi-month high, I believe March corn futures last week, Andy, made the highest price it had been at since last March, or beg your pardon, since last May. So risk off ahead of the weekend. And it was a pretty sizable profit taking. And we'll see what happens on Sunday night. But it was enough to spook the market a little bit on Friday.
Argentine weather. Can you review maybe the week in the weather forecast coming from Argentina and progress there and how that might be impacting markets?
It has been hot. It has been hot, and corn is pollinating as we speak, Andy. So I think that was one of the factors that did support that rally in corn earlier in the week, because we're getting some smaller crop estimates out of Argentina now. With the change in the forecast, which is now calling for a return to normal temperatures moving into the second week in February, and maybe some rain, not a soaker as such, but a more of a normal pattern, maybe moving into that second week in February, is just enough to take the edge off of the bullishness, because it had been quite bullish throughout that last half of January, of course, as your listeners know, into that first week in February. With the hot and dry pattern, the month of January, Andy, across the key growing areas of Argentina was, I believe, the fourth driest in 45 years. So there was a legitimate reason why the corn market rallied, because Argentina is so important.
Commentary from Brian Basting at Advanced Trading. His number 309-664-2314. And on the Hat Friday market review, the final numbers now. March corn 487.5, down 7.75. A 7-cent loss on the May corn contract going to $5.5. July dips to 504.5, down 6.25. March soybeans 11 cents lower, 10.49.5. May 10.65.5, losing a dime and a quarter, 9 cents lower. July contract 10.81, and wheat a little lower all day. March 5.82.75, down a nickel. May 3.25 down at 5.95.5. Steady to higher in the meat markets. April live cattle right at even, 196.77. June up 27 cents, 192.10. April lean hogs 92.15, up 40. That's our market update. Much more still to come on the weekend show. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
It's too good to be kept a secret. The Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter. Every weekday morning, it gives you the latest news that's important to Indiana agriculture, plus a review of the farm markets and a customized weather forecast that's just for Indiana. It's free. It's in your email box every morning. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your employees to sign up for the Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
We've got quite the active weather pattern trying to unfold across the Hoosier State. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's weekend weather outlook. We're starting it off here on Saturday with milder air trying to lift northward. And in that milder air, there's clouds and also some moisture. We're starting to see already some moisture, some rain unfold over southern parts of Indiana here this morning. We'll see a slow build of this cloud cover and moisture farther to the north through the day today. Now, this is a potential overrunning event once again. Remember, we've dealt with cold air the past 24 to 36 hours at the surface, so I think there's an opportunity for this warm air to be lifting north over the top of colder at the surface. Why is this important? Well, that could give us another opportunity for an icing event, much like what we saw Wednesday night into Thursday. I don't think it's going to be as much of an event like that because that Wednesday night Thursday event happened again overnight when temperatures are going to generally be at their coldest anyway. Here with us today, we're having this happen during a warmer part of the day, right in the middle of the afternoon. So I think it decreases our chance for a significant icing event, but it does not remove it. So just be aware, later this afternoon and evening, there can be some slick spots if we get freezing rain. Mostly we're talking the northern part of Indiana, maybe down into central Indiana as well. The moisture here gets gone probably by sunset or shortly after. We are going to be seeing by midnight the entire state starting to clear out. It's a little bit cooler as the warm air sags back down to the south. Dry for Sunday with sunshine and high pressure sitting close by. That's the way we start Monday as well, but clouds increase Monday afternoon. And next week we have a very active precipitation track setting up in areas to our south, coming out of the eastern part of the southern plains and moving through the deep south. With the core of moisture staying in the Tennessee Valley and down into the deep south, we are going to be dodging the major bullet, but we are not going to rule out moisture coming across the Ohio Valley on the northern fringe. So I think Monday night through Tuesday, we have to keep the door open to a little bit of light rain or wet snow. Clouds go over the rest of the state. Then Wednesday into Thursday, have a slightly better shot at moisture. Light snow trying to come through, especially on the northern edge of the low down through the Tennessee Valley. So that could give us a couple of inches if it holds together the way we're seeing right now. We'll revisit that a little bit later in the week. We should dry out for Valentine's Day on Friday, getting some sunshine and maybe a little bit of temperature moderation late in the day. And then that leads to an active weekend with rain on Saturday the 15th, snow potentially Sunday the 16th, and much colder air coming back in for the week of President's Day. So up and down all over the place, plenty of moisture coming over the next two and a half, three weeks. That's the way your forecast is stacking up. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin.
MicroEssentials S10 from the Mosaic Company delivers uniform nutrient distribution. Every single granule contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. MicroEssentials has superior nutrient distribution when compared to MAP or DAP blends. This means your crop does not have to search for those nutrients, improving nutrient uptake. Choose a superior phosphorus fertilizer with MicroEssentials. Contact your local ag retailer to learn more.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and you've been hearing about the Farm Bill, or lack thereof, for several years now. Last weekend at the Purdue Ag Alumni Fish Fry at the Tippecanoe County Fairgrounds in Lafayette, I spoke with Indiana Congressman Jim Baird, who sits on the House Ag Committee, and he told me he believes a new farm bill will get across the finish line here in 2025.
I think there's a real opportunity for that because we understand, as we've been across the states and across the country, how important this ag bill is. And then with the consequences of inflation and the prices and the low prices for commodities for farmers, we really need that safety net, and we understand that.
Congressman Baird told me he's more encouraged now that Republicans are in control of the Senate, because last year when Democrats were in charge, then-Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow waited until the lame duck session late in the year to put out their version of the farm bill, which by then was too late to do anything with.
You're right on target, CJ. I mean, you know, to forestall that until, you know, we'd already put it off 2 or 3 years. And so here we are right at the last minute. The farm bill comes up every 5 years, and how we can wait till the end of the very end of it to put something on. And it really is discouraging from my perspective that by doing that, we end up trying to cram stuff in it. And we really ought to have the time to analyze it and do what's right for the country and what's right for our people.
Congressman Baird shared that one of his top priorities for a new farm bill is making sure the money is available for ag research for our land-grant universities.
I'm a strong advocate for research. I've done a lot of research myself. You know, a lot of our land-grant universities, and Purdue is one of them, a lot of those facilities were built back in the 50s and 60s, and they're really kind of ending their useful life in a way for being advanced research and the technology. We want to make sure we got the tools in the research laboratories that entices young researchers and to perform quality projects.
He adds that he's also in favor of putting Farm Bill research funding toward finding solutions for stopping the bird flu virus.
How devastating to, you know, farms like Rose Acre Farms when that bird flu ends up in their facility. The loss of animals, the loss of production, loss of money. You know, agriculture operates on a very narrow margin, and it doesn't take much to go negative. In some cases, it's already negative, but that kind of thing is concerning. And so we do need to have the research and the facilities to make sure we can contain that.
You can check out my full conversation with Congressman Jim Baird as he talks more about the Farm Bill. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. As we continue our focus on getting a new farm bill passed and signed into law by President Trump in 2025, several ag leaders testified before the Senate Ag Committee this past Wednesday, urging your lawmakers on Capitol Hill to strengthen the next farm bill. Sabrina Halverson has more.
Agricultural leaders Zippy Duval, who is president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, and Rob LaRue, who is president of the National Farmers Union, urged lawmakers to modernize the farm bill and strengthen risk management programs amid economic struggles faced by farmers and ranchers. Duval emphasized the economic landscape has shifted dramatically since the 2018 farm bill, citing inflation, rising production costs, and the lingering effects of COVID-19.
We are hearing that maybe 20% or more of our farmers are going to have difficulties getting operating loans. And we're in a time where that should have already been done, and they should have the seed in the barn ready to start planting. And it's really hitting them at a hard, difficult time. They are telling us they're losing money per acre. Corn over $100 an acre losing.
Duval urged lawmakers to prioritize policies that will protect farmers from economic uncertainty and support the next generation of agricultural producers. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
Thank you, Sabrina. As we pivot now from what's going on with ag policy in Washington, D.C., to what's going on with ag policy back here at home, Eric Pfeiffer joins us now.
All right, CJ, thanks. We are here at the State House. Bruce Kettler, President and CEO of the Agribusiness Council of Indiana. A lot of ag bills moving through here at the State House. Bruce, what's most important to you and ACI this year?
Yeah, we have several things we're certainly watching. As you mentioned, there are a lot that touch agriculture, may not even be direct, but the big one for ACI this year is the Grain Buyers and Grain Indemnity Corporation. There's a big bill. A lot of the folks, ag groups, work together to try to strengthen. Make sure we took away some of the discretion that was in the case of the grain buyers agency that they had. Try to improve and strengthen, and I think we've done a really good job as a group to strengthen some of the financial needs and commitments for licensees. And of course, a lot of licensees are members of ACI and looking at that. And then there were a few things directly for the Grain Indemnity Corporation for them to handle some more things directly for that group. Electing officers and having the ability to be able to get counsel when and if they needed it, if there were claims that they needed to. Several other bills, there was a bill about studying for treated seeds, we're watching that. There was a bill around the state chemist office, proposal to move that into the Department of Agriculture. We're not exactly sure, we think that may be dead, don't know for sure, but we'll continue to watch and see what that plays out because a lot of our members work with the state chemist's office, whether it's on crop protection, fertilizer. I think, you know, we have very good relationships. Our members have good relationships with the folks in the state chemist's office, so we'll watch that. We'll continue to watch some water bills. They haven't seen much this session thus far on water, but there are some there. There was a bill that Representative Culp had on the taxation of grain processing equipment that could affect our members because it allowed commercial entities to consider that and look at that as well. And there's a couple bills on PFAS and that we're watching. They're very different, but we want to watch because that could affect crop protection products and how we're able to use them or if we even have them available for farmers to use.
With Bruce Kettler here at the State House, if you want more information on that bill from Representative Culp that Bruce mentioned, you can tune into the latest episode of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. We'll have more on ACI State House Day on our website, HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Eric. More of Hoosier Ag Today is coming your way next, so don't you dare go anywhere. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
That is a huge issue if we get into this, because that's where a number of our exports go. We're talking about trade wars on just about every front now that we would be taking on all at the same time. So it's just tough to say right now. And when I talk to farmers about this, it's, yes, we want to take on China. We want them to trade fairly. We want them to do this right. Yes, we wanted Mexico to get rid of this silly ban on GMO corn. We got that figured out, by the way. That is taken care of. We got that sorted. But now what? Like, we just don't know where this is going to go next. Now we're just looking for answers. And again, I think there's only one person that can really provide those.
Get more episodes online at agrinovusindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again for joining us here on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and leasing farmland for solar energy production remains a very hot topic across Indiana. As Eric Pfeiffer reports, a survey from Purdue wants to know just how much farmers are being offered to convert their land into solar farms.
The Purdue Ag Economy Barometer has been gathering this data going back to 2021. Dr. Jim Mintert, Professor Emeritus of Agricultural Economics at Purdue.
We've actually had to change how we give the answers to this question to capture the higher rates, because in the early days, the vast majority of responses were at $1,000 per acre or less. That's really started to shift. And if you look at the most recent results, 26% of the people who had a discussion said they were offered $1,500 or more per acre.
In this most recent survey, 42% of respondents were offered over $1,000 per acre. Dr. Michael Langemeyer, director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture, says it's interesting to see the wide ranges in these rates.
There's probably difference regional, which we can't pick up because we don't ask information about regional differences. But the main point I want to bring up is do your homework. Just because you're quoted a rate, it might seem really good compared to your cash rent. Try to find out what other people have been offered, if at all possible, because the rates vary tremendously.
Mintert agrees, though they acknowledge that information can be difficult to get.
Many of the agreements include a non-disclosure agreement with respect to the rates, but that doesn't apply prior to signing.
Mintert also encourages you to engage a professional during negotiations, because there's a lot more to the lease than just the dollar amount, like how the land would be managed, for example. You can hear more from Mintert and Langemeyer in the Purdue Commercial AgCast. You can find it at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
And if you're an Indiana woodland owner, then sign up now for one of the short courses available from Purdue Extension and their forestry team. Joining us now is Lenny Farley. He's a forester with Purdue Extension. Lenny, what can you tell us about the courses that you have coming up?
This year, we've actually got four options for landowners. So the courses are going to be offered starting February 11th in Brown County. February 26th, we're actually going to have an online course that would be available to anybody, no matter what their location. And then March 6th, we've got two courses starting that date, one in Marshall County and one right here where I'm at in Tippecanoe County, which I'll be leading, and I'll also be helping with a virtual course.
Lenny, what are some of the topics that you'll be covering as part of this course?
We try to give a really nice overview of forest biology and forest management for private woodland owners. And so we offer tree identification, forest biology and ecology, forest management planning, forest management practices, the economics and taxation related to forest lands, wildlife management, considerations for selling timber, and then a final kind of wrap-up question and answer additional information session as well. So really a nice broad overview of the topic, plus typically one or two field days associated with that as well on a Saturday to give folks an opportunity for hands-on experience out in the woods, kind of learning some of the different characteristics and features that we've talked about of forests and how they're managed.
Lenny, how much is registration and what do you get when you sign up for each of these respective courses?
So the in-person courses have a $50 registration fee, and that provides access to all of the course content, a tree measuring stick, a flash drive loaded with over 100 publications and other resources from Purdue Extension, Department of Forestry and Natural, or Division of Forestry in the Department of Natural Resources for the state of Indiana and others, as well as any class handouts. And then the online course is only $15 registration, but because it's online, we don't actually offer the tree stick or flash drive, but we do hook folks up with all of those online resources that they can access.
And Lenny, how's the best way that an Indiana woodland owner can sign up for one of your courses?
All of these courses are listed at the Purdue Forestry and Natural Resources Extension website. And so that website is www.purdue.edu/FNR/extension. But if you just want to do a web search on Purdue Forestry and Natural Resources Extension, it'll take you right there.
You can also find that link at our website, HoosierAgToday.com. Once again, the Purdue Extension Forest Management for the Private Woodland Owner Short Courses going on across the state beginning this month. And Lenny Farley, Purdue Extension Forester, thank you so much for sharing your time with us here today on Hoosier Ag Today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, CJ. It was really my pleasure, and we appreciate this opportunity.
And with that, it's time to close up shop on this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Also download the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. It's a free download for iPhone and Android. Enjoy the rest of your Super Bowl weekend, and maybe this time next year we'll be talking about the Indianapolis Colts in the Super Bowl. From our award-winning team of Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Sabrina Halverson, and Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.